My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. In the 1977 Styx classic recording, Come Sail Away, Dennis DeYoung shared a lyric that resonated with me and mirrored experiences I had as a child. He wrote in part, "A gathering of angels appeared above my head. They sang to me the song of hope, and this is what they said. They said, come sail away, come sail away, come sail away with me. I thought that they were angels, but to my surprise, we climbed aboard their starship. We headed for the skies, singing, come sail away, come sail away, come sail away with me." This lyric implied contact with extraterrestrial or extra-dimensional beings that were friendly and caring. Many have had experiences they called abductions that were far from friendly. Are there both friendly and unfriendly beings visiting us, and what are their motivations and intentions? My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Mark Brinkerhoff, knows these beings well. Mark is a contactee, lucid remote viewer of his ET family, crew, and spacecraft. He's a self-aware aspect from 12-plus dimensional universals of the Christ Group, the Alciglion Group, the Asteron Intergalactic Command, and a walk-in who remembers entering this life unveiled. He's also a remote viewer, has photographed and documented ET craft, is a gifted mystical artist, and manifested in this life to rescue an aspect of his soulmate, his wife and partner Phyllis, who will also be joining us. His website is intergalacticmission.com, and he joins me this week to share his story and the messages from his ET family. Please join me in welcoming to Destination Unlimited, Mark and Phyllis Brinkerhoff. Welcome, guys.
Hi, Victor. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today. This is a fascinating story with a lot of positive information that I know that our listeners will resonate with and really need to hear at this time. So, Mark, please share with our listeners your early path and first contact experience in this incarnation.
Okay, Victor. First, I got to thank you for the honor of being on your show, having us both on.
Thank you.
And our, let's say, semi-invisible crew who's tuned into us as well. And if they share some information with me, I'll let you know. But a lot of times they'll say something telepathically to me, and I'll just say it on the air. I guess my first experiences was before I came here, actually, before I came into this earthly body and as a walk-in. And my memory is from my past as well, which would be from the ships where I come from. And these are high-dimensional ships.
It's more like the dimensions
you come from. Yeah, dimensions, not physical spaceships like Planet Earth spaceship or rockets here. It would be ultra-dimensional, actually. Like people say today, they're calling it ultra. In a way, it's the highest high frequencies from 12th. And I've been speaking 12th dimensions since 1960s. And I waited for people to catch up around 2000-something when they finally started mentioning it. But I was talking to my parents about it, and my father especially. All are on the other side now, but before they passed, they actually admitted to me that I was not from Earth, and they thanked me for coming in to share some things with them. But these 12-plus dimensions, I'll go up 33 frequencies of light, dimensional planes. Then there's more than that, 75 and on. So people want to say, oh, this is limited in number or something, but it's not true. It's actually many, many unlimited numbers and frequencies and dimensional spaces within each plane. So what we are on right now on Earth is what we call, on the other dimensional side, the first plane. This is a low-density, heavy-dense frequency, and it's actually not your home. It's your training grounds. We call it the boot camp Earth, or boot camp grounds for these heavy-dense physical planets similar to Earth. But not all dense physical planets are full of evil and hate. They have challenges and they have disagreements, but they've conquered other things too. Like, we'll think of Venusians on another frequency of ethereal plane, they've conquered all that information. When we think of hate and murder and all that, they don't do that. They find it hard, these space beings I know, to understand why humans on the planet want to kill and shed blood. That's something that's not something in their mind. They wouldn't want to hurt their brothers and sisters at all. They'll work things out always. So when I came from where I come from, and my memory of it is clear, just like you remember a vacation you took 3 weeks ago, it's the same way for me. I remote view, Phyllis actually coined it for me because I couldn't figure out how to word what I was doing. To me, it's a telepathic link mind connection, but it's not. When I think to my oversoul or to my friends and crew who are oversouls as well, I think and I see within my eye, within my mind, in that blank screen we have there, but it becomes lucid for me as I'm in two places at once. I'm seeing through my oversoul's eyes. I'm talking with telepathically to the beings I know on the other side who are my friends and family. I call them space family friends. That means the soul groups and friends you've made. And you come back to other places on the planet systems. If you're ethereal, coming in for ethereal life or physical heavy dense lives, you can do that with your friends and family who might become brother, sister, cousin, husband, wife, whatever. And I know people think there's only two sexes on these planets, but in many planet systems, there's more than two sexes. It's a androgynous things going on. There's different kinds of ways to explain it. So where we come from on these high realms, nobody puts people down or souls down for their beliefs, really, or what they feel they connect with. That could be guy, female, male, male, whatever. It's all different ways. So it's an open energy of that. People are drawn to the way they feel and what they're connected to. And as oversouls, we're androgynous, and we tend to take the form we feel comfortable in when we're working. Some souls choose to be male more often than female. Some souls choose to be female more often than male. But all have had past incarnation life or ethereal life as different sex.
But getting back to
your question,
the question was,
I think I'm telling you all this because of a reason.
The question is first contact experience.
Yes,
that really has to go back to you. Why you came in.
Yeah.
Why did he come in? That's the question.
When I came in as taking over a body that was going to be stillborn or discarded, as they call it in the other realms, that you have to take on a body that's not going to be either able to come back in some way. Sometimes people have a car accident and a soul who has a mission wants to come in, and maybe they switch, the soul leaves that was for the body, and if the body's good enough to be animated, that soul, another soul can come in and take it over. If there's a reason, there's usually not that many reasons, but it is a mission of some kind to either enlighten or help people. I haven't met too many at all, actually, other walk-ins. I've heard of other walk-ins. I did meet Ruth Montgomery in 1980, who we were at a lecture place, and she came up with a friend who was talking with her, and she actually came over to the table Phyllis and I were at. We were in for our UFO investigators, and we were watching their table for them at a meeting in Long Island. And she comes over to me and she says, I see the ships around you. I see that you're this very tall being, and I recognize you are a walk-in. She says, you know how many walk-ins I've met? And we said, like, no. And she goes, I've met many people who claim they are, but only one that was, and you're the second one.
Wow.
She's met. That's what she's told me, and that was 1980. So I know they're rare. And I've had people actually think they are, and I had to explain to them somehow what you're thinking you are is really a connection now to your higher self, which feels like other information has just come in when you connect in that way. And that can happen through different reasons, like accidents or near-death experiences and things like that. But to get an over, when a person says they were walking, that means they took over the body. And if they came in a body that recently died, like in a car accident, that person that walks in might not know that family they just walked into, or the husband and wife, etc. And that's the difference. That I asked them, do you come from somewhere else, you feel this, and you don't recognize the people you're with? And they say, no, I do. I said, well, that's what I mean. When a walk-in comes in, they usually really come in with a blank slate of the soul, the body they just walked into, and they usually don't recall the memories of that person's before life, who was living in the body. except in what's recorded in the brain, and that can come in later, and they work with it, and then they realize this person's saying they're my wife or husband, and I don't recognize them, you know, in the family, stuff like that. That's how it's challenging for souls. I know walk-ins are kind of rare because from what this is, people here on these planet systems have karmic connections, and those connections are strictly formed on the other side, on those higher council meetings we go to. So my crew and friends, we had to come to two councils here in the solar system and work with them and explain what the reason was we were trying to get in. Is there a way we can get in to just bring a message as well as rescue an aspect? And they said, well, you know, you have to take a discarded body and we can help you locate one. And that's how it happened. And I originally tried in the 1920s to see how it's done. 1920s. I didn't know at the time it was 1920s until I explained it to my father as a little kid what I tried to do. And he said, you're describing things from the 20s. And I was describing things in Turkey, which I would not have any knowledge of as a 4.5, 5-year-old. So that's how we try it. And I was able to get in. We had to locate where my wife's aspect would be. And she was in Connecticut area. And so I came in the New York area through my father, who I know from space. So we had to find connections like that. We had to find a connection to soul friends and family.
But I have to jump in and say, you know, the real reason he came in to get me now in this incarnation,
yes.
Was because we're heading for a global reset in the not that distant future. And once that happens, unfortunately, life isn't going to be that easy to survive on. This is a cosmic event, a cyclical cosmic event, which I've been studying for a couple of years now because of Ingo Swann. He led me to the information. And so he came in to make sure that I didn't recycle back to this planet. And I had gained enough good karma over my lifetimes to be able to be escape. Saved in that way. So in answer to one of your other questions is, Phyllis, how does this make you feel that he came back to get me?
Yeah.
Extremely lucky.
I had a vision of Phyllis in 1976 when I was in Florida for a few months helping a friend down there. And my question was, it was a three-day prayer question. You ask a question, take 3 days. You ask a question, you wait through on the third day for an answer or a sign. Well, that day I was driving in a car and I had a sign. The energy of the car changed. I'll say the essence of the Holy Spirit seemed to fill the car because it was smells with it. And I had a passenger in the car who didn't notice anything. But for me, it was all there. And I looked to my right and the passenger sitting next to me was gone and it was Phyllis. At that time, I had no idea who Phyllis was. I recognized her sitting there and I was told, observe, but do not touch. You don't touch a live actual vision. They look 3D and real, like we're sitting there together. So I looked at it, observed, and saw that when I looked ahead on the road was Tampa, flat road. Now there was a mountain with pine trees. Telepathically, I knew I have to go back north to the area of mountains and pine trees where I come from. And when I looked back, Phyllis was gone. So I knew I got an answer to my question, which was, is there anybody on this planet? I was praying to Christ, Yehoshua. I was saying, is there anybody on this planet that can accept and understand me with all my stories, all this information, that will accept me for who I am as a friend or more? That's all I said, because I was putting no emphasis on anything. You kind of leave everything open to Creator to send your way. And that was the vision I had after that question. So I felt calm knowing somewhere in the future I'll be guided or directed or she will be guided and directed to meet me. I do not go searching. So you never search.
And how did that meeting happen?
Well, that gets interesting.
Sometimes there's so much information that Mark has to deliver that it's almost incomprehensible. And I've been studying with him for 43 years. So I've asked probably 100,000 questions. The way that knowledge works and the way that evolution works, spiritual evolution works, you have to earn it. And the way that you earn it is obviously by correct actions, but it's also by pursuing information and asking the right questions. So if you don't ask a sophisticated enough question as you're evolving in your spiritual experience in anywhere, actually in the universe, in any realm and whatever, you're not going to be given the answer. But because I'm an extremely curious person, I asked every question you could possibly imagine. We probably would have 17 books written already if I had actually taken notes. But the bottom line is, Mark was not revealed everything. Even though he had access to his oversoul whenever he wanted it, they weren't going to just dump information into his psyche while he was down here. It had to evolve naturally and had to unfold in a way that you would think, well, you know, you're in touch with your oversoul. How come you don't know this? How come you didn't understand that? How come you didn't know, you know, that Phyllis was your aspect yet or whatever? It's because it wasn't, it had to unfold in a particular way. And now that we've gotten to basically the end of our life in this incarnation, you know, who knows how many years we have, you know, 10, 20, 30, probably not 30. You know, we know all the answers, or not all the answers, but most of the answers that he didn't know when he was in his early 20s. Okay. Yeah. So just to clarify that, because I know it's confusing when Mark starts speaking about his experience, it is so complicated and so unbelievable that, you know, if I didn't know him the way I know him, if I hadn't watched him, you know, say, oh, they're telling us that there's UFOs out there to photograph. And then I got up to go to the window and he starts taking pictures of UFOs or, you know, light ships, whatever you want to call them. I probably wouldn't believe them. But because I've experienced it viscerally for so many years and, you know, he's never failed me.
But you've been in the field with me.
But I just wanted people to understand that when you're speaking about different points in your life, it may seem like maybe you were lacking full knowledge of your reason for being here, even though you are in touch with that oversoul intelligence. Does that make any sense to you?
Absolutely. I understand that completely.
Okay, yeah, good. I just wanted to put that in there because he normally, when Mark is talking, he talks as though everybody understands basic concepts and ideas about metaphysics and, you know, all of the things we're talking about here. And I'm a student. I'm a great student. So I understand when there could be a slight disconnect from something he's saying to how it's landing, you know, on a student.
Phyllis had mentioned Ingo Swann before, and Mark's bio includes meeting with Ingo Swann, the person who first formally introduced the world to remote viewing. What was that meeting like, and what did you learn from it?
Well, it's our friends tried to help us connect with Ingo, one of our friends, and two of our friends, actually. And one set up a little gathering at her apartment.
And dinner party.
And a little dinner party, yeah, just a few of us. And she was trying to set up so Ingo could actually meet with me and Phyllis. And I have a notebook I would carry with me, photographs and art in it of the UFOs and things. So I brought that notebook and meeting Ingo, and he sat down, and we're at like two chairs in the living room, little chairs, and like knee-to-knee chairs, you know, you could be in front of each other. So I gave him the notebook, and I was going to go get tea that our friend was making and bring some tea. And so I went to the kitchen, and I'm getting the things, and I'm coming back, and Ingo is closing the book as on his lap. He's closing it back. And I went over to him, handing him his tea, and I said, oh, but I was going to sit here with you and go through each page, letting you know what happened here, what happened in there, and what that photo was. He says, oh, that's okay, sweetheart. I already did it. And so I sat down. We're like opposite each other, knee to knee. The notebook is on our knees, both of our knees. And that's when Ingo starts saying, he was a super, super psychic. Most amazing to me. And I had seen a picture of him in an old magazine I still have to this day in 1970s. And I showed my father this image of Ingo on the cover. And I said, see this guy? I said, I know him from space. See the artwork behind him? He's trying to imitate what goes on in some of the transformational energies as we go through dimensions. My father says, how do you know this? I said, well, I just know him from space. And I know I'm going to meet him someday. And my father would say, you know, you've said that in the past, and you always end up meeting the person. Like, when I was about 10, maybe, I met I saw Betty Hill's information, and I said, I'm going to meet her someday. Mm. So I did. Mm. But that's another story. So Dingo, he says to me, and no one's known this information, just Phyllis, and that's it. And no one ever, I never mentioned this to anybody. He goes, so it must have taken a lot of energy to compress your soul energy, because he knew I was a big soul from the higher frequencies. They call it old souls, but it's a lot of energy. He says, it must have been a lot to compress all that energy. You're really out there, and compress into this tiny little baby inside your mother. Did you ever feel claustrophobic? And I went, oh my gosh. I said, yes, but that's the reason I feel felt claustrophobic. Whenever I do, that's the image that it comes to me, is when I compress myself to get into the tiny little body inside my mother's tummy. And that was when she was 8 months pregnant, and she was going to have a miscarriage, and the soul that was there left. And that's a whole different story. But then he saw that switch. He saw when it happened. No one has ever seen that. No one. So I said, yes, you're right. That's exactly what happened to me. And he goes, he says, and I see you're your own higher self here inside your form here. And I went, Ingo, no one sees that. Are you actually seeing me right now? He says, oh, sweetheart, I see you right here. And he points to the picture I drew and points to me. And he says, you're right there looking at me. You, here in this picture, that's who I'm seeing.
What an amazing experience.
And that's who other people have seen. Like psychics would, if I'm talking somewhere, they go, you know, they come up to me and they go, you know, there's like these 12-foot people hanging around you and giant beings, and one of them's always around inside you. And I said, well, that's me.
But in keeping with the Ingo story, because it's just so absolutely amazing.
Phyllis, I'm gonna ask you to hold that for a minute, because we're going to have to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll finish the story. My guests are Mark and Phyllis Brinkerhoff. We're talking about his experience, her experience, their experience, amazing experiences. Please share with our listeners where they can find out more about you and your story.
They can find out more about us on intergalacticmission.com, markbrinkerhoff.com, where you can get a good connection to the Intergalactic Mission there, on the Intergalactic Mission website. And we're on Facebook as Mark Brinkerhoff. And you'll see UFOs above me on the picture that Phyllis created for me.
And we'll be back with Mark and Phyllis after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times. Co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Imagine yourself being transported to India, to the banks of the Ganga and an ashram in Rishikesh. Visualize that you are welcome to satsang with an American sannyasi who shares the wisdom of her guru. Your visualization has manifested. Join Satvi Bhagavati Saraswati for inspiration and transformation every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio.
Right now, we all feel a little disconnected. For seniors living alone, the isolation can be overwhelming. Connect with an older loved one and have the conversation of a lifetime at StoryCorpsConnect.org/AARP. A message from AARP, StoryCorps, and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guests this week are Mark and Phyllis Brinkerhoff. We're talking about all of their experiences. You had left off in the last segment about talking about your relationship with Ingo Swann. Please continue.
So this was going back many years ago, in mid-early 90s, when I met Ingo. So we knew him for almost 18 to almost 20 years, actually. But we were really good friends with him. And he told me one time, he says, you know, I got so many friends, but you know how your mom will tell you there's five people in the world that you consider your friends at the end of your life. He says, I want you to know you and Phyllis are my first two fingers on the hand. And I was touched when he said that. And he says, and that day that I met him at our friend's house, when he said, about me compressing into this little body and all that, and getting into this little baby. And he asked me something, you know, he just mentioned some stuff about, it's like the photographs and things. And he realized, he knew they were real. And he asked me a question, and I answered some stuff. And I mentioned to him that I was on the moon, and I've been to the moon from other times, and it's a base. And I knew this as a little kid. I told my father, you know, the inside of the moon is a spaceship, actually. It's a base. There's people inside. And this is 1959, you know. So my father even asked me, how did you know that? And I said, well, I go out there at night. But I've been there before, because you got to go there if you know how to get there. So I told Ingo about the things on the other side of the moon that no one sees, what's underneath and what the beings are like inside, the people that are sort of human-looking, some of them and not, and they're very scientific. Ingo described the similar things, right? And he talks with me. And we discussed a few other things about the solar system. And at the end of that conversation, he says, you know, out of all the people I've met on planet Earth, you're the only one who's seen what I've seen. And at that moment in that meeting, that first time, was when I knew Ingo and I were totally connected. And I felt a calmness in my heart, you know, because I felt, here's somebody who's from space, who I knew I'd meet someday, and here I'm meeting him, and I know him, and I didn't know whether I should say I know him, but I did say, you know, we know each other from other times. And he smiled, and then he goes, yeah. So that was our first inkling into that. Then he invited us over, and then he came to visit one of our little parties we had. And that's the way it was happening. We were back and forth, or mostly Phyllis and I going to his apartment house, the building downtown, and seeing his artwork. Where I would come over, and he'd be painting one of his beautiful paintings. And, you know, it was like I was that artist that I would sometimes say, gee, I wish I just could touch one of his paintbrushes and have it.
Wow.
But Phyllis and I, in time, in late 90s, right? We were, he asked us if we can help with his books he was creating, like Secrets of Power. What was the other one? Secrets of Power 1 and 2.
He needed diagrams illustrated exactly the way he drew them in pencil, and he was extremely precise in his drawings. It was like, but he needed it as a mechanical, so he hired me, actually, to make the mechanicals, and then Mark would help proof.
I proofed his books. Now, first few books, he didn't give us any acknowledgement. He didn't want to put us in, he thought, would cause the secret people or whatever to try to contact us. And when I told him one day, I said, oh, that we're not afraid of that stuff. My phones were tapped upstate New York in 1970s, so. And you didn't have tapped phones in those days or call waiting. And he laughed, and so he didn't have a computer set up at home.
He had a computer, but
set up to the internet.
It wasn't hooked to the internet because he was so suspicious.
Yeah, and his phone was unlisted, and he trusted me and Phyllis with his phone only to alert people we felt he would be interested in meeting. So it was, I would never give anybody his number unless he okayed it. But I would okay everything with him. So it was kind of interesting the way we did. So he finally put our names actually into a couple of his books.
Some of the last
at the
books.
End, last books he had, because we said, we don't care. That's all right. So he said, I want to give you guys acknowledgement. It was cute. But he had the father energy for us, Phyllis and I. So we realized after going out and getting some information that on the other side where I get the more information, my crew and friends, my overpart, said, well, we've known Ingo before, but he was like a parent to us in another galaxy.
Mm.
So that's why Phyllis and I seem to be able to do no wrong with him. And he would get upset with people, but he seemed to always just be laid back with us. And actually, I'm allergic to smokes and cigarette stuff. And he liked to smoke his cigar. And he would smoke a cigar by his window upstairs in his kitchen area. And he had a fan on a stack, a standing fan, that he would go get the fan from the other room. Because he's going to smoke, but he's going to try not to blow it at us. But we had the fan blowing. So it went across us. So even if the smoke came towards us, it went towards the left or something like that, just disappeared. But his joke with us, and that fun, because he knew I was allergic, but he always would say, oh, it's okay. And he'd he would play with the smoke, and then he'd blow some over and watch my reaction, which would be, and I'm like pretending to cough, you know, like that and gag. But this was a game with us. And the thing is I, of all the people I've ever been around with smoking, Ingo didn't affect me as bad as ever I thought. So it was, even for me, just a fan, at least I knew it was there. But we noticed that it didn't affect us the way I would be affected by other cigarettes.
He actually appeared to you in the form of smoke when you were parking the car.
I was double parking the car. It was about a year after he passed away. It was 2013 when he died in January. And about that next year. And I was double parking our car and sitting in it. I had the windows closed. And then I lowered one of the driver's side windows about 4 inches, just to get some air coming in. And it was cool. And all of a sudden the car fills up with cigar smoke. And that's Ingo. But I looked in the mirror and I went, wow, I'm looking in the back, you know, that's interesting. I immediately thought of Ingo. But before I thought of Ingo even more strongly, I said, well, let's just check. So I rolled the window down. The smoke didn't leave the car. I looked out on the sidewalks. There was nobody smoking anything. Anybody was there. It was hardly anybody. And I was laughing. And I said, Ingo, are you just trying to say hi again? And he goes, hi, sweetheart, in my head, really loud. As if he was in the back seat with me. You know, he's in the back seat. So I kept looking at the mirror, thinking I'll see him smiling at me. But when I looked in the mirror, I could telepathically see young Ingo in my, you know, third eye. You could see the screen there. Even though you're looking, you know what I mean, right? When people say I have a vision, it's you're looking at the plant, but you can see the fairy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What a wonderful, wonderful relationship and experience. You were talking about your first, we never actually touched on your first contact experience. Please share that with our listeners.
Okay. Oh, before I end that, instantly as we talked with Ingo and in the car, the smoke stopped and was gone out of the car. It was not in the car anymore. It was like, there it was, and suddenly it was dematerialized. And that was his joke, you know, because he knew that would get the joke. We would get it. Yeah, that's me.
Wonderful sense of humor.
He is funny. He is really funny. My first contact physical was about 4 and a half when I saw a being in my room as a friend, and then it disappeared. And then at about, I'll say around 5, most people are in kindergarten, I was not supposed to leave my yard at all, but we lived not far from our school. So I estimated, because to test myself, I'd run up the school to the road and run up to the back football field, and it would take 30 seconds, just 30 seconds to run up my yard and go run up there. So I knew I could run up and run back, and no one would know I was gone. But that one day that this happened, I would go lay down. Normally, I'd be laying down around 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock. But this day, my father would come home from down working in New York City, come around 7 p.m. after getting the train and coming home. It was always around 7 p.m. he showed up, and my mother would pick him up. And that day, while they were having something to eat, I was laying down in the bedroom, and I closed the door a little bit. Now, what happened is they thought I went to sleep. I had a different kind of bed. So I went in there, but I crawled out the window, which would make it hard for me to climb back in. I could jump out, but I can't climb back up because we had a gutter thing that catches water for and gives light to the basement. So there's a basement window there. So it's a jump down. It would land inside 2 feet down from the ground. So I could climb out, but I can't climb back in. So I snuck out the window because I was impulsed to go up to the field. So I ran up there real fast.
The school field.
And it's a big, giant football field. And there's two fields in the arm, but a big, giant football field. So I ran to the center where I know I was told, just go to the center over there. So I ran over. And I was doing this since I was a little kid. And even my grandmother was always watching me. But if I snuck off, she knew I snuck away, and she'd find me up sitting on the wall of our school. So I knew it was against the rules, because, you know, in those days it was the same as today. You know, people could probably pick people up.
So you were doing it for skywatching purposes.
Yeah, but I went skywatching that way, and I would go out there to the field as well and talk to Creator and ask, well, you know, to take me home. That was my little thing as a kid. Take me home. I got to get out of here. The people don't understand, and that's kindergarten, right? So I got up at the field, and I'm looking at the stars. It was early stars coming out. The sky was starting to get dark, and you see the stars, and it was getting darker. And we had, at that time on the school field, we had a clock on the wall outside the school that they would use for football practice, so you could always see the time, and it looked, glowed in the dark. So I saw the clock, but at that time I couldn't tell time too well, but I knew I was up there and I shouldn't be here that long. That's what I was saying to myself. I gotta go back, you know. So I'm looking at the clock, then I look at the sky, and I'm asking to please take me home. I was always saying, take me out of here. Well, that night, a bright star comes moving across the sky from my right side to my left. I guess that might be going north to south, I don't know. And it stops directly overhead and it starts lowering. So it's getting larger and larger. And I got up and I was so excited because I was sitting on the grass. I got up and I was jumping around. Yay, I'm going home finally. They're going to take me home finally. And I'm excited. And the thing gets to the size of a quarter in the sky above me. Bright glow, white disc bottom that I can see. And then I telepathically hear, kneel down, don't jump around, just kneel down and be calm. So I kneeled down, I was all excited, my heart beating, but I was so excited, and I did, just did what they said. And the UFO or spaceship goes hovering over to the right of me to another part of this field that I understand today, at that time now, that was behind the school, so no one would really be able to see it. So it went down, and I saw it coming down to the ground, but it hovered. It didn't land. And this is all peripherally, watching from my right side of my eye. I found I could not turn my head at the moment, but I could see everything from my right side. I could turn my eye and everything. So I watched the beam of light come down, a person appear there, coming down, and then walking towards me. And I was so excited because I knew this was my friends. And I could see this person's walking but levitating on the grass. Like just above the grass, I could see that they were levitating, like float walking. And I saw the shadows underneath and the light from the ship underneath the grass of the feet. So I saw the shadow and I was like, whoa, this is cool. But comes over to me, very, very tall, and bends down, picks me up in his left arm. And I'm cradled, like sitting on the left arm of this giant human being type of being. Looks kind of human-like, right? But they have big eyes and a little different. And I'm trying to put my right arm around on the back to the shoulder blade area. I'm trying to put my arm back there. And I can hardly reach what I'm reaching because the person is so big. So I just had my arm there. But he held me so warm and close. I felt totally engulfed. I was okay. And he walked back to the beam. And we stand in the beam and we get levitated into the ship. And now I'm seeing all the field and all the areas around from the sky as I go into the ship, which opened up in the bottom. A doorway opened up like a sliding thing opened up, like, I can't say like a lens of a clock, of a camera lens, but it wasn't like that. It was more like a hole that expanded and dematerialized. And then we went in and the whole flooring underneath it came back together. We found ourselves, I was inside this misted purpley lavender floaty cloud effect of energy. I could still see through it, but it was very mystical looking, filled with energy of love. And when I was held by the being, I was full of love, full of energy, full of love and oneness with just a feeling of bliss, actually. So now I'm hovering in this, being held. And this energy came around intuitively. At the time, I didn't understand it, but intuitively, I knew this was just cleansing. I was just being cleansed and cleaned energetically. And the word didn't come to me as acclimated, but I understood the feeling of being made able to now be here. That was a vibe. Mm-hmm. But today, now I would say I was acclimated to the frequency because I understand what they do. But as a five-year-old, I was experiencing it with the limited knowledge of where I come from, knowing that this is all natural, this is normal, what I'm going through right now, because I've done it before. So now I'm we walk, the doors open up, the mist disappeared, doors open up, and I see interior of a ship. And I drew that in one of our illustrations on the website of the interior. And I'd have to say there was other beings there, yes, and there were people that I know now. But I recognized them all, and I knew they were friends and family. I called them the friends, and I'd always call them my best friends.
And I'm going to ask you to hold that thought. We're going to have to take a quick break, and we'll resume when we come back. We'll also start talking about you had a wonderful experience. I had a wonderful experience. Not everybody does. We'll talk about that. My guests are Mark and Phyllis Brinkerhoff. We'll be back after these words on the Olden Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers, pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guests this week, Mark and Phyllis Brinkerhoff, were talking about his experiences, and he was talking about his first contact. So you're up on this craft, this wonderful window, not window, but some type of an aperture opens up, and what happened?
Well, the door, and there was what they carried me into, he carries me into this, what we would call the bridge, but it was a giant room. In the center of this area where they walked me towards, it wasn't the center of the room, but it was the center of the area of the bridge effect. Of, they had windows. They had windows that would open up. They had monitor. The walls became monitor-like things that showed different energies. And I looked at them and I understood them, but I couldn't word tell my anybody what it meant. But I understood them intuitively. And so there was in the center of this room, area of the bridge, or I guess you'd say, a rounded table with a dome on top with lighted light button effects around side parts of this little counter effect around it, like in silver, and had a pedestal effect to it too on the underneath it. So he took me to this, and inside the dome of this mystical, this glass, it looks like glass, was the star systems. Guessing how big it was, I have to say 8 feet diameter, but the beings were pretty tall beings, like 8 feet or so. And I'm looking at it, and I reached down, because they were holding, he was holding me, but I could reach around, you know, and do things. And the other people would talk, and I could hear them speaking, but I'd look at them, and their mouths weren't moving. And I heard them the same way you're speaking through as someone's talking to you, to your ear. And I found that fascinating, but then I realized what it was. And I said, that's a thought speak. We always do that. That's me. It's my own will. We always do that. So I reached to this glass type of top of this thing, and I said, what does it do? And telepathically I hear, oh, it puts imagings in as you think. And we use it for teaching things. We use it for showing where different ones have gone, and we got people meeting here. So I touched my hand to it, and it felt like warm crystal, very nice feeling of it. As soon as I touched my little tiny hand to it, the image of my favorite dinosaur at the time was Godzilla. And I love dinosaurs. So Godzilla shows up walking around with a skyline in silhouette. And I laughed, right? And I untouched my hand, and it dematerialized into mist. And the other people there were watching that, and they thought that was fun. So they described how it worked as best they could. As you think, these things will come in. So I tried again, and I put my hand down, and now animals showed up, like a horse, one of my favorite animals. So I saw how they were doing that. So they said, you want to see something else? I went, yeah. So they put me on the floor. Now I'm walking on the floor, which is very soft. And these people are huge. Like, I'm at their knee, you know? It's like huge people. And so I'm walking around, and they say, stand here. And I waited. And all of a sudden, what appears in front of me is what looks like a baby dinosaur, what we call brontosaurus, or now it's called a patasaurus. But that dinosaur was probably 6 feet high to me, with a big neck. And they said, this is not real, but as real. So they said, you could touch it. So I walked over and I touched it, and it responded to me. It brought its head down and looked at me. I walked around it. It had tail curled around, but I walked around it, and I was laughing because I love them so much. And I kept thinking, is it real or is it not? They said, well, it is real as a projection can be, and actually has the animating energy of a real dinosaur or creature. They call them dinosaurs for me. That would have been, had been once upon a time. So I'm touching it. It brings its head down. I'm looking at it. I'm petting it like a cow. You know, you're petting it. And that was an incredible experience. Then I was done. They came over and I stood by them, and it dematerialized. I was able to try to tell my father that when I got back, saying I saw 3D realistic. I couldn't explain the thing. I said a picture photograph made real. So how would you describe that in 1958? I couldn't figure out how to describe that until I got older. But when the thing is when I went off the ship that night, they took me to behind the moon. We went around the Earth, zoomed around the Earth. So it's round, everybody. Zoomed around the Earth, went to the moon, went to the planet Saturn, went to Mars, zoomed around our solar system. It was like space-time fun. And then I'm back to our field area, and then they pick me up. We go into the room where the mist comes, and that's when I fell asleep. I know that's when I fell asleep in their arms. And my best friend, as they called. I had no idea until I got older that my best friend, who I was in the arms of, was actually my overpart, my overself. But as a child, I always called it my best friend. So then they put me back on the field in a different spot, actually, than where I was. And waited. They went on the ship, hovered above me, and watched, and energetically woke me up because I was tired. I was a little kid, and I'm laying on the grass, and I'm aimed at the light on the school with the clock that's lit, and I'm feeling the grass on my cheek, and I thought, that's weird. What happened to the pillow? You know, that's weird. And then I turned my head, opened my eyes, and I see the clock glowing, and I went, oh, I'm still on the field, you know, but I'm not where I was. And I hear, look up, and I look straight up, and I sat up, and I look straight up, and above me is the spaceship hovering, is huge, like 3.5-inch diameter in the sky above me.
Wow.
You know, really right there. And then they said, hurry home, run. So I said, okay. They said, go home. So the clock on the school, even though I couldn't really tell time at that time too well, was looking like it was saying 5 minutes or so to 11 p.m.
Mm.
And I had left the house at about 7. Mm. So I ran so fast. I got to the back door, and I realized there's no way to sneak into the house because I couldn't jump on the window. I tried. I can't sneak into the house without going past my parents sitting in the living room because we didn't have any other access to the back hall. You had to go right in front of everybody. So I said, I'm standing by the kitchen door. We have the screen door. And I said, what am I going to do? The TV's going. I see it in the kitchen window door. In the door. I said, what am I going to do? And they said, no, just wait. Just wait. Then they said, quietly open the door. So I quietly opened the door, and all sound stopped. There was no sound. The TV was stopped in action. They said, go quickly to your room. So I walked slowly, crept through the little living room there. My mother was sitting on her sofa. My father was sitting on the other side of the sofa. My grandmother was sitting in her lounge chair. Our dog at the time was curled up by her chair. Everything is stop action. My mother was smoking a cigarette, and the smoke was hovering in stillness, like a snapshot in the air.
Wow.
That's what, never moved. Her eyes are open. They're not blinking. So I went by them, and I waved at them. No movement. I went to my father. They're all looking at the TV, and on the TV was a TV show, 11 o'clock TV show of some kind, sort of like a talk show. And I walked to my room that I shared, actually, but I went into the room with my grandmother. I shared a room with my grandmother. It was a big room. So she was on the lounge chair. So I snuck into the room. They said, open the door, close it the same way you had it, which was just like 3 inches open. That's mm-hmm. it. I go inside, and I'm taking my shoes off, you know. And at that moment, the TV noise comes on. Boom, right then. So I humped in the bed, and I went under there, you know, and I was saying, thank you to them telepathically. But that was a sign when I walked through the hall and got into the bedroom. I said, what just happened? And then the sound comes on. They said, you were in the space between the spaces.
Mm.
And I understand that as time got on, that's where the angels walk and work with us too. I didn't see any angels at that moment, but they let me see what it's like to be in between dimensions where it's slowed to get the idea of what it's like if you're an Aetherian coming through. You're in that dimensional space as well when you're coming into this planet, and then you're going to form a body. So everything looks slowed and stopped action. In reality, it wasn't slowed down. I was the one who was speeded through another frequency to observe it in stop action, even though I knew it was moving.
We have about 4 minutes left. You had a beautiful experience. My experiences were beautiful. Some people don't have beautiful experiences. Are there negative versions of what happened?
Yes, I've never had a bad experience with my friends and crew, but I know people who did. You know, they had abductions and missing babies and nightgowns upside down, replaced backwards, inside out, things like that. Cuts on their body, unexplainable in areas they couldn't put it themselves. So we have these beings that a lot of them, people are representing, they're calling them grays, but there are different species of beings that resemble grays, and not all are bad. And I've known a few on the other side out there. So it's the ones that are working with the militaries here on the planet Earth that came in the 50s, early 50s, where they were given access and that they can work with some people. Like, I don't want to say abduct, but that's what it was. And that is with our gang and our friends on the high realms and where we come from, that's against the rules for us. You don't abduct anybody or take on anybody or take their DNA without their permission. And that's against the rules. But these beings, rules, who cares? That's these beings. So on the other side, we know that those playful beings, we won't call them, I don't want to call them evil, but sometimes they can be. They will sign a contract and just ignore it. You know, so that's the Aetherians came to Eisenhower in the early 50s to warn them about these types of beings and not to do business with them. But they ignored that. And they did business with them. So they have a base in the southwest areas and the deserts. They allowed these beings to have a base there with an exchange of energies, I guess, like laser technologies or whatever they were exchanging in those times. So a lot of that exchange has occurred because they want resources from our planet. But their planet, those beings, their planet's kind of destroyed. It's kind of gone. So they're going throughout the universes or galaxies, let's say, here for now. They're not traveling omniverses, these beings. They're not too advanced. They're physicals that can work within the next dimensions. They're not 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 12th, or any of those frequencies. These are beings trying to upgrade their DNA, and they give stories. Some of them tell stories to people through channeling, which I don't agree with at times. They'll say, oh, but you acknowledge this. You asked for this to happen to you. You know, you came in reincarnated, and you said we can do this. This is their game. This is not something usually people who are coming back in to say, yeah, you can have permission to abduct me, cut me open, do things to me, and take my DNA. That's not something that's actually something we do on the other side.
We have so much more to talk about, but we're running out of time. My guests, Mark and Phyllis Brinkerhoff, fascinating. Thank you for sharing. Please tell our listeners one more time where they can find out more about your story, your artwork, and everything else.
Well, okay, my artwork is Mark, M-E-R-C, Brinkerhoff, B-R-I-N-K-E-R-H-O-F-F.com. And there's a link to get to the our Intergalactic Mission website called intergalacticmission.com. And there you can see photographs of the UFOs that have been documented, and stories, as well as illustrations of my experiences and the beings I talk with. And there are many, many good stories. I'm a storyteller, I find out, but there's true stories, but they all have a meaning here, what's going on with these beings and who they actually are and who Sananda is and the Infinite Creator.
And we're going to have you guys back again to share that more. Phyllis, thank you very much. And Mark, thank you very much. And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor, the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.